Meg.
Late Night Gamers Podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers.
Steve.
This game sucks so bad, it's so unbalanced, blah, and then I just quit, never play it ever again.
Carlson.
What do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut off a dragon's head.
Tim.
It's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess, as long as you don't take your clothes off.
Late Night Gamers.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Late Night Gamers Podcast, episode 24. With me this week, Nick Persnowski. This week and every week is...
Hello, is
Tim Madden.
To infinity and beyond!
Steve Morgan.
If you're flappy and you know it, clap your hands.
And Charles Caldwell.
Whopper on a vibe, whopper on a vibe.
What?
The ice is gonna break.
The ice.
Oh,
it's gonna break!
So, normally we're again recording at a late time this week, and we normally get right into recording when we sign on to Google Plus and do a hangout. But this week we decided that we're just going to talk for 30 minutes about basically all the games that were on the podcast. So we could have probably been recording this entire time.
Sure, we could just put it all in.
Mix and match.
No. I wish I could just show your face that you just made.
Yeah. The listeners at home don't get the joy of Charles's face during these podcasts.
It's joyful to look upon.
It is.
It's like a terrible child baby experience. Jesus face.
It's nice to have normal Charles back this week.
I know. Sick Charles was
something
no fun.
Yeah, I was pretty miserable.
He was like in a coma.
I told you, I took one NyQuil, and then I took another NyQuil. I staggered the dose. Chopped up the pills real fine. Took a needle, poked it in my eye, you know. That's
anyway.
What it says on the bottle. Come on.
What, to poke you in the eye with a needle?
Definitely.
This week we have a pretty special episode because we have an interview with the co-founder and game designer of Red Barrels Game Studio, and which just released their game Outlast on the PlayStation 4 this past week, and it's actually the PlayStation 4 PlayStation Plus free game of the month for February. So, we're going to go into that in a little bit later. We want to start out with a couple news items that have happened over the past week. The new PlayStation Vita Slim, which has come out in Japan and Europe, is also going to be coming to the US, which I don't think is any surprise.
Is the Vita Slim like Marlboro Slim? It's just a less addictive version of the original.
Yeah, it's the PS Vita unfiltered version.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a lighter version. It's like the
physically
it's
lighter,
thinner. Yeah, like the weight is lighter.
It's not like white colored or something.
Instead of a 8-pound brick, it's 8 ounces.
So it's lighter, and the screen is also it's not an OLED screen anymore. They downgraded to an LCD screen, which
so it's not as bright.
No, that it doesn't look quite as good, but it's
is it less expensive?
Yes, that's the other thing too. The slip, and they're coming out with a bundle this spring. You're gonna get a Vita Slim, Borderlands 2, an 8 gig memory card for $199, which is actually pretty decent. So if you were on the fence before, I think this is probably going to be the thing that can actually bring you to it. Because Borderlands 2 alone, I mean, you can put friggin' tens of hours and hundreds of hours into that game. Yeah. It looks ridiculous. And the Borderlands 2 game comes with all six DLC packs. And it's cross-save with the PlayStation 3, which is pretty sweet.
It's pretty nice, yeah. It's cool.
There's also announced this week, too, that the God of War collection, God of War 1 and 2, are coming to the Vita. So, I think that's May or something. So that'll be exciting. That'll bring some new stuff to play on the Vita, which I've been looking forward to.
Sick.
Next thing on the list, we have... the overnight sensation game Flappy Birds, which was on iOS and Android, was doing super, super well. People were addicted, and now it's Flappy Birds are dead because the guy who made the game
You weren't supposed to play this.
I don't understand where it's coming from with it.
I didn't realize people would actually pay for this. God, get that out of here.
I mean, he said that he didn't want it to become an addictive game, but isn't that what basically every iOS game is? Like, kind of, you know, cell phone games, they're all, like, short, addictive games, because it's like, if you don't want to do it after 5 minutes, then you're not going to make any money from it, so that's kind of what everything is. Candy Crush Saga, like...
I just think he didn't understand what he was making.
I think that he, like, he has a couple other games that he made that are, I think they're ranked like 6th and 10th. You know, they're pretty high up on the Apple's iOS App Store. But apparently, this was like a quick thing that he did. And he just—I don't think he wanted the fame that came with it when it exploded. And also, he said that he regretted like something that was so like addictive. You know, he didn't want to cause people to be like addicted to the game. I don't know, there's some other theories that people think that, like, Nintendo, threatened legal action against them for using their, you know, like Mario sprites and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. It is what it is. One less shitty game on the App Store, so I'm happy.
Flap a dat!
He was reportedly making, like, $50,000 a day, though.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Like... What? Please. I mean, work for 6 months and then never work again. Honestly, that's crazy.
Yeah, the game looks absolutely terrible, too. Just saying, straight up.
Yeah.
I saw it and I was like, immediately like, yeah, I want to play this never. I think even IGN did a review and they were just like, yeah, this game is really like, you know, cool. And then you realize like that you can't do anything. And it's like the same thing over and over again.
Well, Tim, you, you equated the game to, something that we're on. It was on the Palm Pilots back in like the early 2000s, that cave game, which I think was on other stuff too, but.
Yeah, it goes back even further than that. That was I feel it was. Our French teacher had a. It wasn't a Palm Pilot. It was a Handspring or something like that. It was like the, It was supposed to be better than the Palm Pilot, but it was like a competitor. And then I was like, I got so addicted to. I literally got so addicted to Cave on that thing that I spent my like allowance money for like a year and bought up my own Handspring so that we could sit in the lunchroom and play Cave for like hours on end. But it was the same idea. It was like you tap and hold to go up, and then you let go to go down. Like,
yep.
But yeah, that's been out for years. He just basically took like the same mechanic and put it on a touch screen, and people were like freaking, they're losing their shit.
They had the same thing on in Facebook for a while. What was that thing called? God damn. There was a game really similar on Facebook that was really popular, and like a lot of people were like, it was like all like, you know, it was kind of like before Candy Crush and stuff like started linking things on Facebook. They used to have like, you could post your score and then people would just be like, they would just post smack talk and shit. They'd be like, oh, I crushed you in this game. And then I can't remember the game. I'll look it up.
There was like, well, there's something recently that came out was, I don't know if that was on Facebook, but Jetpack Joyride. That came out on Vita too, and it's the same sort of thing where you're just kind of like, it was fun. I played that. It was free. So yeah, the other thing this week that disappointed Charles quite a bit, was that Dark Souls 2 earned a T rating.
I don't understand how this can happen. I just don't understand their normal
M rating. And before the podcast we were talking and we were questioning whether Charles was upset because it was a T rating because he's not allowed to buy T games, or or because it's not the M rating that everyone else has been looking for.
Charles is actually banned from getting anything below an M rating.
It's true.
He has like a restriction on his card for like anyone would steal it because no.
They're like, this is not mature enough for you. Like, what are you doing?
You go to buy it and they're like, "I'm sorry, sir. I'm gonna have to take your credit card. You must not be Charles."
there's actually a new ESRB rating that's CV Charles Violence.
Charles approval. It's a little seal they put on the bottom of the game. It's
Charles's face. A little thumbed up.
So Charles, you see this as an issue.
Yeah,
potentially.
I do, because the whole premise of the game is that it's dark, and I don't really understand how they could make a game that is as disturbing and dark as they need it to be without an M rating. I mean, T, really? Like, how do you swing that when the game is supposed to, like, I guess I don't know what would have made it M for Dark Souls, but it just seems to me that if that was M and this is T, then they really must have missed the mark on something, because that game didn't, I mean, Dark Souls didn't seem like it was that gruesome to me. And so if the distinction was so fine, then what did they remove to make it a T? I mean, come on. Like, did they make it so that you couldn't die as often? Like, I don't get it.
I don't know.
So I mean, even the article is pretty vague on exactly what it means. It seemed like it was the characters that you come across aren't as gruesome and disturbing. Like, maybe they don't have decapitated heads or something. I don't really know, but it just seems to me like a poor move. They should have been shooting for on the cusp between NC-17 and M, as opposed to though NC-17 is like, is that porn? No, that's not porn. I don't know. But the rating between M and that one that they can't release it in stores or something. I mean, they should have been pushing it rather than, oh, we should make it so everyone can buy it, including your 13-year-old child. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you think they're just doing it to sell more games?
Yeah, probably.
Because honestly, like, I mean, the audience that they're going for and that they've had for, you know, the first two games are all M-rated, so, I mean, they're just going to be older now.
Yeah.
And I guess they probably figure, yeah, you know, these people, they'll buy the game.
One of the things that they've said is they want to make sure that it's as hard as the old one, but when you have to say something like that, it kind of makes me wonder whether they're just like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's gonna be all right, but it probably won't be as hard, and it'll probably be dumbed down to some extent. Is my bet, and that's probably what makes it like partially T. The dumbing down the difficulty, dumbing down some of the like the things that make it so gruesome and difficult to make it the T, and then they'll try to get more teenagers involved. And then it will suck, because then you'll, for all the multiplayer component, you'll have all these little teenager trolls posting things everywhere. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's all the news. Well, all the big news from this past week. There were a couple other little things too, but now we're gonna present to you the first of hopefully many more segments like this, but an interview with someone who's actually in the game industry, and yeah. With me today is a man who has worked on such titles as Assassin's Creed, Prince of Persia Sands of Time, and Splinter Cell Conviction, and his name is David Chateauneuf. He's now the co-founder of the game studio Red Barrels and the game designer of their first title, the scary as hell survival horror game Outlast. David, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks to you for inviting me to that. It's pretty... I really love to talk about what the team is really proud of. So it's a chance for us to share our thought and pretty much answering all the questions that people had. So I'm pretty happy about it.
Well, we're so excited to have you. So why don't you tell us a little about yourself and what you do?
Well, the whole thing started, I would say, 14 years ago when I was still at school, and I decided to Ubisoft where I decided to come come in Montreal. So that's where I started. I joined Ubisoft at the same time as Philippe Morin, which is one of the other co-founder, and we both grew up there learning from our mistakes, and there was not such people that could tell us how to do games. There were still people that knew the industry, but still, that was for Montreal. In Montreal, that was one of the first big company for a game. So then we grew up there. We switched project. Phil at some point decided to go to Naughty Dog and work on the Uncharted. Hugo, one of the other co-founder, decided to go and start the EA company in Montreal. And myself, I just decided to stay at Ubisoft for 10 years, I would say. And yeah, I did my first project was was Donald Duck Going Crackers, a Disney title, kind of a Crash Bandicoot game. Then I decided to move on one of the Red Storm license, which is the Tom Clancy Rainbow Six, and I was one of the main game designer there. I was pretty young at the time. I was 20, 21. I was already someone that had the drive to manage a team, but I was I was freaked out at that time. I was freaking out. It was brand new. But then I kind of make myself a place in my in the studio, so they allowed me to go first on something much bigger. So Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. I actually got a tattoo, and Patrice Désilets, who was the creative director of that project, got one too. It's we were brother on that, and it was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
And then what happened there? We switched on Assassin's Creed, because we wanted to create something else, and we wanted to grow bigger, and then so the company hired a bunch of people, and all the teams become really big. So it was quite an experience for me, but for some other people it was maybe too much. So for Phil, when he moved to Naughty Dog, it was a smaller team, but then so he brought at Red Barrel some experience that was quite interesting. Then we, Hugo, Philip, and myself, we just regrouped in EA Montreal, because Hugo started a new project, and the title and the gameplay in there was pretty much was really exciting. So we all, I decided to quit Ubisoft. Phil came back at Ubisoft, and then did rejoin Hugo that I and myself, I rejoined the two of them, because at some point the project was canceled because of some like business reason, we was like, okay, are we gonna just go back to one of the other like big company, or, and we said no, like just let's just start something, like it's now or never, because if it doesn't succeed, then let's just go back to the big company, and well, let's just not like let's just succeed, like there's no choice, like. So, but the risk was like calculated, I would say. So, and we had some money like here and there. So we just grabbed some money from the government and the money from our pocket, and we just tried to do something pretty exciting. And the whole thing there was we just put all the good side of the three of us. I mean, like Philippe Morin, I knows a lot about like movies. He worked in that industry before. Myself, Hugo Dallaire was the artistic director of Splinter Cell, the first Splinter Cell. Mm-hmm. So he knew a lot how to do like lights and shadow and really play in the dark. And myself, I was just like the horror freaks. I've got like 500 DVD-R movie at home.
That is fantastic. I'm such a huge horror fan myself. So yeah, finding someone else who has the same sort of almost fetish, passion. Then
yeah, it's crazy. At some point, you know, people are sometime I'm coming at my place, like I'm doing a party, I'm just inviting people, and it's like, oh cool, you got a little movie, and I don't want to say it, but at some point they kind of notice that, oh, it's our movies. And then I say, yeah, those are all our movies. And then you can see their face looking at me. It's like, are you a freak? Like, are you killing people? Like, and I'm always saying like, yeah, there's a body like underneath the bed.
Yeah, you definitely get that, people who don't watch horror movies have that, it has a connotation there that we don't necessarily want them to have.
No, as a friend. Yeah, and people doesn't understand. That is, most of the comment that I receive, like, why? Because it's freaking odd. I mean, like, there's adrenaline, like, you are really part of the movie. Like just an action or like love, like maybe like some kind of girly movie. Uh-huh. Like you can feel something. I agree to that. But like for me, like to have the best like, emotion, it's all about like being afraid, because you're tense. You're on your knees, like not on your knees, but you're kind of, you don't know where to, like if you have to look or not. So it really goes to the like deep in my body, so it's for me it's great, and I can't lie as well. It's like I like going to some roller coaster coaster thing, or I did some parachute.
Oh, nice!
So like everything like that brings me like big emotion. For me, it's like I'm always all in. So that's why like that was my passion since I'm 12. I was buying those movies. I was watching our movies, like while my mom and my dad like didn't know. They were like, "Don't watch this movie." And it was like, remember, it was Alien, and I was like, "Okay, I'm not gonna watch it." And but then, like maybe 1 year later, I was, "Oh, there's that movie that my dad and my mom and dad didn't want me to watch it." And I was like, I watched it that night, and it was so freaking nice. And in the morning, I said, like, hey, I watched that movie. I watched Alien, and it's just great. Why didn't you want me to watch it? And since that moment, like, I can say, like, Alien was one of the first movie that jumped me into the horror craziness thing. But then it's definitely Evil Dead that, like, was my best, like, movie ever.
Bruce Campbell, yeah.
With him, and I watch pretty much all the I think I've got like I've got that movie for time at home, like all the that thing. So like that's maybe what I brought to the three of us, and like, and because we have a lot of experience, we knew and contact, so we knew a bunch of people, and we started to talk about that, and But I would say, like, maybe before that, we had to really jump into the action. So after we quit our jobs, we had to do a movie, like a small, like a gameplay footage to see like what we wanted to do and what kind of a mission we can do and mm-hmm. what is the feeling. So one of the, like Hugo on his side, decided to look for some like art direction and art things that can spark us in something. And he found Robert Johnny. I think it's that movie from Chris Cunningham. It's a weird movie about a child / alien sitting on a chair, and it's in a night vision. So Robert Johnny and Chris Cunningham was something that sparkled us to go into that like spookiness thing, like realistic, photorealistic kind of image. And we had to also, like, I was analyzing all the game that was on the market. I played like all of them. I've got like all the Fear, the Amnesia, the Condemn, like the previous Doom. So I played them all. So I knew, okay, maybe a mix of that and this and that. And I would say Phil on his side, I knew pretty much as well, like what to do in terms of story and in terms of like really giving emotion to the player. So we were, the three of us, we were really excited about that. So the movie, like, on my side, I was starting building up the layout of the gameplay footage, and Phil was having fun recording the camera, like if it was in first person, and Hugo was doing the hard aspect, and we had to think about reusing all that for the Unreal Engine, because it was not on Unreal 3, it was on the Unreal UDK, so we had to switch everything after that, and we had no like office, we had nothing. But it was seriously, it was great. It was best years of my life, I would say.
That's fantastic.
And when we showed that to people, like, we had to see if like that thing could go somewhere. And like Alain Tasquin, one of the CEO of EA Montreal, well, at the time it was that, he was like, "Oh, guys, you got something. It's really scary." And I was showing that, and the other co-founder was showing that to people, and was like, "Oh, that's interesting. That's cool." So we had to find money. So we went to Sony. We checked with them in terms of like how we can deal with them. Mm-hmm. Then it finishes on Steam, because they like it was a really good opportunity for us. Like they just opened the door for us. So by signing here and there, it was okay. Let's, you guys are good to go. And at some point we had to get some money from the government and make sure that they understand what we want to do. They understand also what the business plan that we had. And so we had to go into some of the things, like area that we didn't do before. Like we're just like game designer and art director. And now like we had to become like an entrepreneur. And know what to do and know how to manage like people and money. And so that's like, yeah, that's pretty much like the whole thing. Like what I was talking, I'm talking for what, like a 10 minute now about that. But it's so great. I'm wishing that to everybody. But then the game after that, yeah, we had to hire people, and everybody that we showed the movie was really excited about it. And it really attracted a lot of people, but maybe at first it was hard, because like in Montreal there's a lot of like it's a huge competition, like all the studio wants the best. Yeah. But I can really tell you that we got like a bunch of really high talented guy. We're right now we're just 11 doing our best, but with passion. Like there's not a guy that is not like really telling what he has to say, and sometimes like it really affects your ego. But you have to, okay, whatever. Yeah, the game has to be really good, and it's really profitable for us. And like everybody you know could tell you that like we are a really good team, which is like pretty fun to work with. And we have to improve ourselves at the same time. You have to. We're talking about maybe switching offices, but I am telling you a lot of thing right now.
Hey, it's all really interesting. I mean, the fact that you guys moved from such large companies to begin with and went out on your own, and you all had enough expertise between you and accomplished something like this with so few people is just amazing to me, and I know it's amazing to a lot of other people too.
Yeah, it's like sometimes I was one of the first who, when I was maybe before that, I was, oh yeah, well, they just did that and okay, they're good, and it was like it was easy to do. But since I'm like we're doing it, it's like no, okay, to really succeed by shipping that with the time, the money, and all the constraint, and without knowing if it's gonna work, I can tell you it's completely the opposite of what I was thinking before. It's like I was thinking that everybody could do it, but it's at the same time it's I think you got to be crazy a little bit, like to jump and just expect that like what you're doing is gonna worth something after that.
I have to say the first time I saw Outlast was it was back at it was PAX East, I think it was 2013, and I went out and I remember just being on the floor and I was, you know, just looking around, and you know, you had a fairly small area with a couple computers set up, and I went and I you know, the Boston Convention Center is huge. It's lit. There's thousands of people. And I put that headset on, and I played through a good portion of the first level. And the number of times I jumped in that well-lit and extremely loud area with all the people around me is embarrassing. But, I mean, that just goes to show how well done a horror game this was.
We had a small booth, like, with maybe three... Was it three or two places?
Yeah, I think so.
It was like pretty small, and the demo was quite long at the same time, so like it attracted a lot of people, and people kept like talking about it, and we had no idea how it would. We knew that like at because of E3, and then that okay, there's a lot of people coming, but when it's your first game as an independent company, like between all the big okay, it was PAX East, but still there was like Ubisoft was there, like EA, pretty much all the big company were there, and went to try to like emerge from all that, and we were really excited about like the crowd and the lineup that people like because of the game.
Yeah.
So then it was really we had like we almost cried of, oh man, there's something there, and people. When they left the booth, they were, oh man, thank you. It's like, oh, it's just great. Like, it reminds me like this and that. And it's funny because we almost like Outlast was almost a game for ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we felt there was not much like good horror games, these days. Like it becomes more like a more and more action. I want to get scared. Like for me, it's like I never get scared these days. Like it's over. So I'm like, let's try to do an horror movie, horror games that will scare me. So I kind of managed to play some of the section and really get scared. So I was like, okay, if I'm getting scared, then people are gonna shit in their pants. that was one of my my gauge, if I can say.
The amount that you soil yourself.
So I guess it worked. It was we didn't pretend anything. We didn't know, just by having playtest and people that came and played the game, they were really giving us like good feedback about like what is good, what's wrong. I know that there's a lot of people complaining about like the tons of jump scares that we did put. Uh-huh. I can say it's mostly about like the movies industries. Like it's mostly the only thing, like the jump scare are pretty much the only thing that like the audience can experiment. That and being also like really nervous, but then to really finish and to go all in with the best emotion, it's always like the jump scares. So and then it was quite fun, so maybe we kind of did put some more at some point, but then people at the were saying, oh no, it's good, I love this one, this one didn't work out on me, so maybe it's gonna work on for somebody else. So we had it was really hard to manage all that. Same thing for batteries, like are we putting some too many of them? Mm-hmm. And you know, when at the end when you have to ship the game, it's like, okay, I hope it's gonna be good and people won't like complain about like the game too much, because there's always like good comments and well, not good and bad comments, but like comments that really are easy on us, and some that are okay, yeah, they experience that in a different way, and oh yeah, that guy was more hardcore, maybe we forgot about him. So we learn by doing the game, and with the result of what people are talking about Outlast, we learn a lot, and we're really planning to do something bigger and better next time.
Excellent. That is exactly what I want to hear, because this is honestly, like, I mean, you hit it right on the head with the comment that so many horror games now, including the Resident Evil series, have just gone in the way of action, which is not the type of horror, like survival horror that I look for when I play a game, because I actually do want to be scared, like you said. And when I played Outlast, because I downloaded it on PlayStation Plus this week, and I'm probably I'm a couple hours in, and I haven't played any time before 10 p.m. So I needed the full experience. And
that's so great.
But yeah, I think the thing that gets me, because my heart is just beating and beating so fast and so hard, because the character you're playing as has like an inability to defend himself, and
yeah,
it's all about, like, you know, almost stealth and that the fear of the unknown, because so much of the game is in darkness unless you have a camera on. So it's like you know, you're peering around the corner and hoping that something's not there, and and all, you're always looking for the next hiding place. And
true. Well, actually, that we're talking about the our games, like in terms of not having a gun. We had that issue in our mind, and we thought about maybe having a gun at some point, but not for the whole experience, but just for a small, like, amount of time. But like when we went to PAX East, there was like people were asking us if like we're gonna have a weapon, like if they're gonna have a weapon to defend themselves, and we said no. We said no. We said like we don't know. We're planning maybe to have a gun, and people were like, oh no, just don't. Like, it's good like that, like no weapon. And so we're like, people were asking for a game without weapon, but so it kind of helped us taking decision about it. So yeah, the weapon thing and just making sure that you have just a little amount of places that you can hide, because there was the locker, mm-hmm, under the bed, and some places that you can just break the line of sight, and we have to manage all that to make sure that people won't get like too frustrated, but then like at least run for the life or like just an exact amount of time, considering like we couldn't like create a huge environment, so there was like some tiny corridor, and at some point you don't want a player to run around, and so yeah, it was quite of a a challenge for us to mix all that and make sure it works well.
Yeah, well, I think I speak for everyone when I say you guys did a good job.
thanks, man.
It's really great. One of the other things that I noticed about it is that there was a significant amount of gore in the game.
Yeah,
in the game.
I know.
And I love it. I love it. Now, I can see how some people might find it a little disturbing, obviously. But my question is, was there anything that you came to when you were developing the game that you decided, no, this is just a step over the line, we can't put this in the game?
Yeah, there was not, we didn't have any We didn't have a line.
I didn't think so.
No, seriously, we had a line. I think the line came from what do we as a human being, as we accept, to see and how and what we think about it and what is important about us. There was that, and we had also to push the limits. Like as an indie studio, like we wanted to go somewhere where the big one are so afraid to go, so taking risk. And with the crazy mental hospital kind of thing, we could like go at places that, for example, like just a zombie, like, okay, yeah, a zombie is hitting people and whatever. Mm. But then like for sure we had some scene that was like, you could say it was free. Like there was no purpose but it was really important for the mood of the player, like finding all that like disturbing, and so we had to promise that without like going like into a, oh yeah, let's put like bad words and stuff like that, but we had to go somewhere where we thought it would be interesting for the player to experience something different and something that we can also like respect ourselves with, and something that like just for I don't want to spoil anything, but like to you, because you didn't play the whole game.
I have not yet.
You're probably you're gonna see it, but it was important for us to show some gore and what, because it truly brings something, like it brings it's disgusting. So just that is good.
Yeah.
Like, too much of that, it becomes funny, and maybe few, like not enough of that, it's just like blood, and people these days are not getting scared of just by seeing a knife and, you know, like just, some blood on the floor, it doesn't work now. It has to be disturbing. It has to be something that like brings you somewhere else, like where like, what is that? So we had to think the gore that way. So that's why we had to add some more. But then I'm not saying that's the key, because like there are some game that doesn't do any of those things. They are playing with your mind, and it works as well. Like if you have a game with ghosts, like there won't be that many gore, but I think it's part of like the three co-founder and like, people that was in the team as well. We wanted to have fun, you know, to do the game for ourselves. And
are there any Easter eggs in the game that only are like inside jokes for you guys at the studio?
Yes, there are.
There are.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I should say that. Like you, but you just have to. I'm just gonna give you a hint. Just look at our names, and you might find some hint here and like Easter eggs here and there. Okay. But it's not that big. It's just like the artists in our team sometimes, like because they're doing the textures and the art, and they plug some of what they think, and it's just funny. We're not breaking that unless like it really can brings us problems and stuff like that. But no, like just tinyly Easter eggs.
Cool. On Twitter today, I noticed that there was a potential a new announcement for the Whistleblower DLC.
Yes.
That's coming out. And I don't know if you can tell us anything about that, but I know that it is coming out.
Yeah, we're planning, I know what you mean, because we were discussing about it today, same time, because we... the whole thing with the PS4, like we thought that maybe people are gonna think that we're not working on the DLC and something, which is not true. Like the DLC is going pretty well. We really want to make sure that it does the job and it really answer at least some of the questions that the players have. And we're planning to send maybe something in like a pretty hurry, but we just don't want to like say too much because we don't we don't want to lie to people. So we just want to make sure that everything goes well. But there's gonna be something coming out like if people are ready to wait just a little bit more.
Okay.
But it's not on back burner at all. Like the whole team is working on that, and I can tell it's we're going somewhere that like people are gonna like.
Excellent. Now are you currently working on anything else, like thinking out past the DLC? Are there any new IP on the horizon?
The whole team is like there's no way we can really like split the team in two and start thinking about what we're gonna do next.
Sure.
So the whole team is really like full time on the DLC, but we do think about some new stuff. Like there's like how we gonna double the team and like to switch between project, or like the team that we have right now, we really like the way we are, and the way we were working together. So like having more people might like break something, so then it means that we're gonna have to wait for something to finish and then do the next thing correctly. That's the thing. We don't want to go into like full production of, oh yeah, let's go and ship. Like we just want to make sure that what we're gonna do is gonna like ship when it's gonna be ready and fun. So that being said, we do like the horror games, so maybe sticking with something with like that again. That is not impossible.
Okay, that was kind of what I was hoping for, honestly. you stick with what you do well.
but sometimes you don't know. We didn't know that we could do something that good. So it doesn't mean that like going somewhere else could also be we could ship something interesting. I think as an indie company, we're just gonna go with the flow and talk with the team and see what they're willing to do. And at the same time, trying to respond to the demand. Like if people, like if the whole planet wants, I don't know, like another horror games. Like it's sometimes it's hard to say like, well, no, and like make all those guys disappointed about it. So it's a mix of what we want to do, what people want, and if we want to do it at the same time.
Excellent. Well, one last thing here I just wanted to get out was I wanted to say Outlast was a great, from what I've played so far, is a great horror game, and it's a great start to 2014 for survival horror. And are there any other games that you're looking forward to or you're excited about in that same genre? Yeah,
definitely. I'm gonna say something. It's good for me, but at the same time, it's we're seeing that like the AAA, like big company, are going into that genre as well. They're looking at the market, and they saw that like there's a bunch of all the small games like Outlast, like Amnesia, Slenderman, like they're doing good, and now they're trying to get there. So it's good for us, like me as a player, because. But then, like, I can't lie about like if the Evil Within, I'm really looking for that game. Alien, I'm curious about this one. I'm really wondering how they're gonna keep the pacing and the scariness of the alien during the whole process. But then, yeah, so Alien, something, Evil Within as well, and the next game of fictional game it's something that I'm looking for as well, because I watched a report or one of the review of some guy that said like the 13 game that people like that were to be waiting for in 2014. Mm-hmm. And there was a bunch of games there that was like, oh, interesting. There's one that I just forget his name. It's all about like you being stuck into a big island with cannibal. I don't have the name. It's just great. That game, like I just want it. I just want it. and because there was in that movie, you could see like body parts like being put on a wood stick, and uh-huh. the guy was trying to chop woods, and damn, I wish I could have the name. But that game seems amazing. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like Evil Within, it's definitely my best thing. Can't wait to play it.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you completely on that. And I think 2014 will turn out to be quite a good year for horror games. Outlast has already come out on consoles, on PlayStation 4. I'm sorry. And you've got some DLC coming out, so I think our palates will be whetted for quite some time.
yeah, no, it's gonna be definitely a good year. So and then it means like 2015. What is it gonna be? Like, are we gonna go into a huge amount of horror games, and then all those like action horror games are gonna go back to what the horror is really, or
yeah.
So it's sometime it's. I'm really curious about how all this is gonna switch, but 2014 is gonna probably be my best year for a long time in terms of games. I can't wait to play all those games.
No, me either.
And actually, there's a lot of pretty good horror movies as well. Like in the last year, 2013, there was a bunch of pretty good horror movies. And I can't wait to see like where it goes. Like I'm really switching between all those like games and movies, and sometimes just asking myself like, all right, I should do something else in my life than just watching stuff.
No, I hear you. I get excited even for like even for like remakes of the. Like Friday the 13th movies, and
yeah,
like I, you know, the ending of Freddy versus Jason still gets to me. Like, where's that going?
There was the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yep,
that was there's two versions of that. It's like, okay, bring it on. I'm not tired of that. Like, that chainsaw that cuts people.
Yeah, I mean, some people don't like remakes, but I kind of like to see what direction the new director takes with the story and what they try and accomplish with it.
Yeah, sometimes it's interesting to see what they do. Sometimes you just wish to not haven't seen like the new movie because you just want to remember what was just good in the first one. So I guess it depends. Like the first Evil Dead, I was happy about the new one, but I had some like high expectation at the same time, which is not the fault of the director. Mm. But then I could say, I wish they could have done that and this and that. But like everybody can say it at the same time. It just everybody got their own idea of what it could be. But because I think they work well with the Bruce Campbell. And again, I'm not talking about Evil Dead again. It's like that game, that movie is so freaking good.
Evil Dead, all of them. Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness. Yeah, it's amazing.
So good.
And it's funny to play the games of Evil Dead, like being in the wood cabin.
Oh, I know.
It's really. I was really like, oh man, yeah, that's really the cabin of the Evil Dead. I don't want to go out, and then oh, that's great.
All right. Well, we're reaching the end here, so I want to thank you again, David, for joining us, and I want to make sure that everyone knows that Outlast is available on PC and now PlayStation 4, and it's free on PlayStation Plus for this month of February.
Yes.
And make sure to look out for the Whistleblower DLC for Outlast in the future.
Yeah, it's coming. People are going to be they're going to be happy. I wish they're going to be happy. I cannot say for sure, but then we're doing the best we can. Again.
Excellent. Well, I have high hopes and I think that you'll meet them. So.
All right. Well, thanks to you, Nicholas, for that time of for me to express myself about what we do here at Red Barrels. It's great.
Not a problem. Thank you very much again. With me.
All right. We want to thank David Chateauneuf again for coming and joining us and being on our podcast. We truly appreciate it, and we hope to see more of him and Red Barrels in the future.
We're going to have to buy you a drink and watch a ridiculous horror movie with you. I was talking to Nick about it. We're going to find a ridiculous horror movie and check to see if you have it, and then if you do, then we'll find a different one. But if you don't, we're gonna watch it with you and see your reaction. We're gonna find the most screwed up horror movie we can find. It's a promise.
I think that would be a good time. But in light of our Outlast interview, we decided this week we're going to do the top five horror movies that should be games. And some of these, well, at least one of these is already a video game. However, we don't count it as an actual horror video game because it's just not. And that's number one.
It's a horror bad video game.
Friday the 13th, which, granted, there were quite a few horror games on the NES. Friday the 13th was on the NES. So was Nightmare on Elm Street, I think Hellraiser, Jaws, a whole bunch of other games, but there was no survival horror to it. It was just more like, oh, there's a guy chasing me now. This is happening. But my thought is that the Friday the 13th video game, the new one, should play as Jason Voorhees. And you should go around and just, like, I mean, he's always, like, he's everywhere. So, like, you could walk out of the water, like, on the beach, you could grab people in their sleeping bags and smash them against trees. It'd be awesome.
You get points for that.
Yeah.
Bonus.
For creativity. Or you could, like, in Jason Goes to Hell, you could slice teens having sex completely in half in a tent. So yes, I think that you should. I think a lot of horror games you should be able to play as the villain, because that would be awesome.
Agreed.
That would definitely not be rated T.
No. Rated M or AO. Hopefully AO.
But would have the Charles seal of a violent approval on
oh,
it.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm.
Four thumbs up.
It's just two thumbs and then two severed thumbs next to it.
Charles is actually Goro. He has an extra set of arms.
It's just a hand, but all of them are thumbs. Five thumbs up.
Sounds awesome.
Alright, number two. Let's take that.
Sure, I can do number two. Alright, so this is continuing our list of horror movies that should be video games. Number two, we have The Ring. And, I don't know, I'm partial. This movie scares the shit out of me. So
who would you play as?
I know. That's, I think, well,
the girl? Samara? Was that her name?
That'd be disturbing.
No, not the well girl, no.
Yeah, you'd be the well girl. Actually, that'd be cool. Then you could decide how you're gonna crawl out of the TV and how you're gonna like fuck people up. If you're gonna like the closet girl with her horrible face, if you like, you're the one, you have to like mangle their face after you kill them. Yeah, so it's kind of like Mario Paint where you like deform their faces and like stretch them out.
The beginning of Mario 64, you just pull it all over the place and just twist it.
Yeah.
Now that game could actually be really good, exactly how the movie was, but you're playing as like that, as the character that's trying to find out about like the video, why you have 7 days and what the significance of everything in the video is, and like each segment of the video could have like a separate level where it would be like a Quantic Dream sort of game where you'd be going and like interviewing people and trying to figure out like it'd be a lot of conversation stuff and
sure. I think a lot of these like would make really good like action kind of adventure, well, you know, suspense type of games where you're kind of getting like involved in a story, and it's like really can be like, I mean, you can have a lot of element of like horror in them. I think it would be really good. Speaking of all this, like, talk about being the crazy people or being, like, you know, the villain or whatever, this reminds me of this game from Sega Genesis called The Haunting. Did you ever play this game?
I don't think I did.
Where you were, like, the ghost, and you had to, like, go around the house just, like, interacting with objects and just trying to scare the shit out of people.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. You should check it out. I used to love this game. You can just, like, mess around with all these different things, and you just like fuck with people in the house and you get like points for it and stuff. It's awesome.
That would be the best.
I think like it would make a much better game now that like graphics aren't like so bad. And
true. Although that's kind of what Beyond Two Souls was.
Oh really?
Yeah, cuz you're playing as the Ellen, well, you have Ellen Page and then you have the ghost thing. And there's actually one level where you go around and you get shunned by these other teens, and so then you send your ghost out and you can like set the house on fire, make a girl stab herself.
Oh, geez,
like,
that sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was actually a really good scene in that game.
Come play with us forever and ever and ever.
Number 3.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, gonna trace you, slice you with a giant chainsaw. Grinding up your body parts to feed my grandpa. And grandma. I forget grandma.
Grandma!
Bring me the blood. Grandma! Bring me the blood, boy.
Grandma! So yeah, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think
the premise, honestly, yeah, the premise of this one pretty much lines up perfectly. It's like you go with a group of friends, they all die immediately after you go explore this southern house. You could either play as Leatherface or as the ridiculous like college student who's wearing nothing at all and wandering through the place and trying not to die, or play as Leatherface who gets to kill all the people. So pretty
I think that game should be, you get to, like, the single player mode, you'd be playing as the college students, and you go into the house, and then it would be like you'd have to escape from it, and you're trying to escape from all these family members. But then multiplayer mode would be like Evolve, like we were talking about, where it'd be like four people and like trying to get away from Leatherface, and you get to be Leatherface running around the level just like chainsawing people in half.
Yeah. That makes me think of that game that someone just posted on Facebook, but it's called Evolve, and it's like 4-on-1. Uh-huh. So it's like a group of people. I don't know what's coming out, but it's for next-gen consoles, but it's like a group of four people are the hunters, and then one person plays like the big monster thing. So I think it'd be cool to have kind of the same idea in Texas Chainsaw. You have like one team is all the like useless humans, and then one person is Leatherface, and like you gotta like try to like, kill Leatherface, but Leatherface is coming after you. And of course you'd be like horribly weak and have like no abilities, so you just have to like run away. That's your only run and hide. That's all you can really do.
Yeah, that's
How did they even fight Leatherface in the actual movie? No.
Well, anyone who tried died promptly.
Right.
You just get a hammer to the head, and then you go behind. You're dragged behind the meat locker. Done.
And then he just chased you down open doors, big doors that are on rollers for some reason.
Hey, you gotta be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're in the business of killing. Who knows what he did with all of that meat? Hangs them on meat hooks? Come on.
Well, I think he just gutted people and, you know, threw out all the inside bits and
fed his grandparents' blood because they're basically bloodworms.
Mm-hmm. And then he just wore their skin.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So he was a tanner.
It's a great movie. Yep. So number four.
All right, number four, Evil Dead, or also Army of Darkness.
Yes,
I think Army of Darkness would be pretty epic.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that would be ridiculous. Like, the whole like other realm, Book of the Dead sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that if you played as Ash, just the epicness of like leading this army against like this evil army, I think that would be so cool.
Oh, definitely. And you've got your boomstick and your chainsaw arm. Yeah, it'd be pretty awesome. You'd have like multiple abilities and be able to go through. I feel like there would have to be claymation, like the original was, or the stop motion, like the. All the skeletons and basically all the terrible creatures in that movie were all just claymation stuff. And number five, Cabin in the Woods.
This game, this movie to me just feels like it would be easily transferred to a video game.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be cool to be like the control people and like unleash the monsters on other people.
Spoilers. P.S.
Oh, yeah. For the Jesus movie. Christ. So if you haven't seen Cabin in the Woods, come on now. Go just stop what you're doing.
Tweet yourself.
Go watch it. Turn this podcast off and go watch Cabin in the Woods. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, that is honestly probably one of my more favorite, like, more recent films. Horror films, that is.
Yeah.
It's just got all that. I mean, the movie just breaks it out into such good ways that could be transferable to video games, so it just makes sense. Like, I mean, you say spoilers, but spoiler, all the different types of monsters that they have, it just seems like it's perfect.
Yeah, it could bring a lot of like horrifying things.
It'd be pretty specialize cool. As the zomboid family, or I am the killer mermaid man.
Or maybe if it was like Spore, where you like designed the monsters.
Oh yeah, that'd be.
And then it was kind of like The Sims, where you had to like control the monsters and make them go to the bathroom, and like they'd get in fights and have kids and get jobbed.
You mean he has the husband bulge?
That's probably the best line in the entire movie.
Oh my god.
That was awesome.
Well, that is, that's the end of, that's all the top five that we have this week. But speaking of movies, this is big news. Big news in a bad way. Jingle All the Way 2 is potentially coming. It's not including Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It includes, actually, Larry the Cable Guy, which seems like the worst possible choice. Who would...
For anything. He's the absolute worst in general.
Whoever's making this, you disgust me.
Sit the terrible men
down. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold's a totally fucking giant dump on your lawn.
I mean, how would Jingle All the Way 2 work?
Like, I don't understand.
Unless it was, like, for his grandchild, because the kid is now, like, gotta be at least our age, right?
They did, of course, Jingle All the Way didn't teach any valuable lessons. The movie really had no redeeming quality except for its humor, because there was no message of a good message for the children. But
yeah, if you want something, you just get it, and if you can't get it, then you just steal some shit.
You lie and steal and eat, drink eggnog,
or if you're Sinbad, you just pretend you have a bomb, and that'll make you have.
The best part is the kid in this movie was Anakin Skywalker.
Oh, I know. He was so bad.
He wasn't hated before.
He's the worst.
But yeah, seriously, Jingle All the Way 2, bad idea. What would be even be the premise? What would be the toy? What the hell? I honestly, I wouldn't believe Larry the Cable Guy is any sort of contributing member of society to begin with, so the whole first 10 minutes of the movie would be a complete lie. He's like, you're my number one customer. I don't believe you, Larry. I don't believe for 1 second. And remember, you're my number one customer. Fail.
Yep. Alright, well, I just wanted to bring that up because I knew that was a hot button for... And that brings us to the end of the podcast, but first, before we go, why don't we go over what you guys have been playing this week. So Tim, what have you been playing?
I actually played the Elder Scrolls that... a stress test. I think I'm legally not supposed to say that I played it, but I don't even care anymore. Jesus Christ, I'm not going to read that NDA thing. I think it's like 10,000 lines long. But, yeah, it was fun. It changed my opinion on it. I kind of liked it a little bit more this time. It seems like it's a little more polished.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's about it. Played a lot of Starbound. I think I said that last time. Hit tier 10, now I'm bored of it.
Sweet. Steve.
Same thing. I played that game this weekend. It was kind of like meh. And then, I just been Dotaing. I started playing Banner Saga. Did I tell you that last week? I don't know. Play a little Banner Saga. It's like a cartoony, strategy. It's kind of like a board game. You know, you have like, you can make moves and positions and stuff. And so... It's got the RPG element, but then it's got storyline. Seems pretty cool. It seems really well polished and really, really well done. It got really good reviews on IGN. So
nice.
Sweet.
Charles.
Well, I've been somewhat limited in my gaming because I was sick, but I was playing Dota a little bit. I had an excellent match with Steve and Mikey as Kunkka and crushed. So
it's true. It was really good. I can verify his story. Kid
certifiably insane.
Okay. Well, I played and beat Outlast this week.
Nice.
It was the most frightening thing I've played in an extremely long time. There were a bunch of jump scares, but like when you're like the fear that you're feeling when like someone comes around a corner, that's a jump scare. But then when they come after you and you can't do anything but run away and try and find a place to hide, it's like and you can't look behind you so you don't know where they are, and you're just like God damn it! Like am I gonna get killed? Am I gonna get killed? And then you run through a door and you close it and hide, and it's just nuts. And The ending was actually quite a surprise. I won't give it away, obviously, but...
Give it away, give it away, give it away now. Red Hot Chili Peppers want you to. You saw the Super Bowl.
But I gotta give it to your papa.
But if you haven't already, download Outlast on PlayStation 4 while it's being offered for PlayStation Plus this month. And even if you don't get it during that time, pay the $20 and buy it, because it's fucking amazing. If you're actually looking for like a scary game, that then play this game at night with headphones on, and you're gonna shit yourself. That's the honest truth. But yeah.
Prove it.
I'll show you my underpants. But yeah, I played that, and I played Sly Cooper on Vita. And that's it this week.
Cool. So
that brings us to the very end of the podcast. I want to thank David Shatzenuf again and Red Barrels for the interview they provided us this week. And Outlast you can get on PC and PlayStation 4. And make sure to look out for the Whistleblower DLC, which should be out, I think, probably relatively soon. No announcement yet, but... So, thank you, Tim. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Charles. I'm Nick. This is the end of Late Night Gamers
thank
Podcast.
Thank you, Nick. No, wait. Hold on. Thank you, Nick. No one has ever thanked you. Just kind of thanked everyone else.
That's true. I'm thankless. Right,
finish the goddamn podcast. Jesus Christ.
Give yourself a pat on the back, you bastard.
This is the end of Late Night Gamers Podcast, episode 24. And good night, everyone.
Good night.
Late Night Gamers Podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers. Steve.
Suck so bad and so unbalanced, blah, and then I just quit and never play it ever again.
Carlson.
What do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut off a dragon's head.
Tim.
It's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess, as long as you don't take your clothes off.
Late Night Gamers.
I'm going to cut to myself. and then, this is in between time.
Bebop.
Then we play the, yep. For some reason, I have like the I Dream of Jeannie theme song in my head right now. Do 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 do